We talked about this a moment ago. We'll look a little bit more in depth now, but the presence of polystrate fossils are also strong evidences that point to a global flood. Evolutionists love to point to the many layers of sedimentary rock and talk about how each layer took an extremely long period of time to form. We talked about that already. And they say that you can study each layer and see an old earth with each layer representing a different period of time. But buried deep within these layers, all over the world, are these polystrate fossils, which means that one fossil occupies more than one layer at one time. And that poses an immediate problem. How could one fossil lie through multiple layers at the same time? A couple of quotes. Organic material like wood that is exposed to elements will rot, not fossilize. The entire length of these tree trunks must have been preserved very quickly, which suggests that the sedimentary layers surrounding them must have been deposited rapidly, possibly and likely during a single catastrophe. Polystratic trees are fossil trees that extend through several layers of strata, often 20 feet or more in length. There's no doubt this type of fossil was formed relatively quickly. Otherwise, it would have decomposed while waiting for strata to slowly accumulate around it. We saw some of these pictures. There might be some different ones that I've got in this presentation, but that's what a polystratic tree looks like. It doesn't make sense. There's even polystratic whales. There's one in California, a polystratic whale. Another peculiar characteristic of these trees that we were looking at. What did I do? That's interesting. I'm still not sure about Max. Jury's still out. I'm not sold on them. But another peculiar characteristic of these trees is that they're often found in odd position. A fossilized tree found in a quarry near Edinburgh, Scotland, measured 25 meters and extended through 10 or 12 different layers of strata. The odd thing was it was laying at a 40-degree angle. It was buried while actually falling down. Some are fossilized standing upright. How could that have happened over a period of millions of years or even thousands of years to be conservative? Evolutionist William Fritz said, I do not think that the entire Eocene forests were preserved in situ, which means in place, even though some upright trees apparently were preserved where they grew. Deposits of recent mud flows on Mount St. Helens demonstrate conclusively that stumps can be transported and deposited upright. These observations support conclusions that some vertical trees in the Yellowstone fossil forest were transported in a geologic situation directly comparable to that of Mount St. Helens. What's the implications of this? It takes very unusual and catastrophic events to create the polystratic fossils that we are looking at. Some evolutionists say that cataclysmal deposits had to have happened. But yet they come back and they say, we don't know how this would have worked. But Noah's flood explains it perfectly. The fossilized remains of marine life in places that are far from the ocean is also evidence. And they'll say, well, the earth has changed a lot over all that time. But look at some of the places that you'll find it. You can go to camp and you can walk around the lake and guess what you're going to find? Horn coral, shark's teeth. There's been some of those that have been found there in that lake bed. How? How did it happen? I remember back in 2004, I was traveling to Ohio to speak and I stopped at the caves there in the Bowling Green area. I can't remember the name, Mammoth Caves. Stopped at Mammoth Caves, and they were taking me on a tour with a group through Mammoth Caves, and they were looking at the walls and the structures that were there. And the lady was standing there saying, well, it takes so many hundreds of years for these stalagmites, the ones that form on the ground, to grow an inch. It takes this much time to grow an inch. And she said, well, these rocks got moved by the owner of the place in the early 1900s. And I'm like, I thought you said that it takes a ton of time for these stalagmites to grow. Well, they were already this tall on top of the rocks that the owner moved 100 years ago. The time frames don't make sense. Well, then we go further in, and there's fossilized marine life in the cave in Kentucky. She's like, how do you suppose those got there? So I'm the smart aleck that raises my hand. I said, I know exactly how they got there. There was a flood, and the entire world was covered with water. And as the water receded, some creatures that had died may have gotten trapped in this cave and or in this area and fossilized. She didn't like that answer either. There's marine life all over the place in areas that logically they should not exist. We find marine fossils in most of the rock layers in the Grand Canyon, including the topmost layer in the sequence. Marine fossils in the second quote are also found high in the Himalayas, the world's tallest mountain range. Reaches 29,029 feet above sea level. Fossil ammonites are found in limestone beds in the Himalayas of Nepal. All geologists agree the ocean waters must have buried these fossils in these limestone beds. Scientists have found fossils of whales and other marine animals in mountain sediments in the Andes. Among the fossils the scientists reported bringing back were the bones of whales and other marine animals found at altitudes of more than 5,000 feet. And this is in the Chile Mountains. Evidently, if you need to make a phone call, you can up there. First time I've seen that. But they found whale fossils in the Chile Mountains. That doesn't necessarily make sense, but it does make sense when you consider the flood of Noah's day. It'd be cool if we could find some of these, Daryl, later on today. Hope you hook us up with that. I want a whale fossil. The Bible's insight into the events surrounding the flood explain this so very well. We've already read Genesis 7. We've already read Psalm 104. So I encourage you to think about those as we consider what this tells us. Since all of this happened in Noah's flood, you would expect to find evidence of this flood throughout the whole world. And that's exactly what we find. The mountains, from the mountaintops to the bottoms of the oceans, there is evidence of Noah's flood. Floods of any size are going to leave behind evidence. If you've ever been to an area after a major flood has gone through, it is catastrophic. It changes the way the landscape looks, sometimes even permanently. That is Rio Puerco flooding in August 1st of 2016, and it totally cut away and carved the sides of those hills that are there. Earth, one scientist said, Earth 4.4 billion years ago was flat and almost entirely covered in water with just a few small islands, now research suggests. Scientists came to the conclusion after analyzing tiny zircon material grains from a region of Western Australia containing the oldest rocks ever found. I don't know how you determine that. There's old rocks and young rocks, right? Our research indicates there were no mountains and continental collisions during Earth's first 700 million years or more of existence. It was a much more quiet and dull place. There are strong similarities with zircon and the types of rocks that predominated for the following 1.5 billion years, suggesting it took the Earth a long time to evolve into the planet we know today. All of that to say that the evolutionists say that over a large span of time, things evolved. And oh, by the way, it used to be almost entirely covered by water. The continents appear to have once fit together, but have since separated. This troubled me in school because I didn't see how the Pangaea could fit with the concept of the Bible. Now, I know I may be the only person that ever struggled with that, but it caused me problems. I looked at the Pangaea and I looked at the Bible and I'm like, I don't see the Pangaea in the Bible. How can that even be real? So I said the Pangaea was just false, but it's not. You look at the world and it obviously can fit together very nicely like a puzzle, creating one big landmass instead of all the different ones that we see today. Many earth science books in public schools suggest that millions of years ago, Pangaea existed as the main land feature on the globe. Due to rather slow processes known as continental drift, the continents lazily drifted apart over millions of years. With an array of impressive terms such as plate tectonics, seafloor spreading, polar wandering, paleomagnetism, evolutionary scientists explain the division of Pangaea using uniformitarian philosophy, in which present conditions and rates of drift are extrapolated back over millions of years of supposed Earth history. All of that to say, what they do is they look and they say the continents are drifting apart at this very slow pace. And we extrapolate that back over the distance that it would have had to have moved to create the Pangaea, and we can tell how long they've been moving. It's not just about the shape of the continents. There are also many rock formations that begin on one continent or abruptly stop and then begin again on another continent, almost as if something cut them apart. And the Bible doesn't explicitly say that the Pangaea existed, but in Genesis 1, 9, and 10, it does lend some credence to the idea that it may have happened. But I want you to catch this quote from businessinsider.com. It says, scientists just found out that the earth did not shift at quite the crawling, gradual pace we once thought. Instead, the move happened as it fits and starts, with continents creeping apart at that single millimeter per year rate for 40 million years, and then suddenly speeding up to 20 times that speed, the rate at which your fingernails grow. That's pretty quick. As the New York Times recently pointed out, the simulation lets us see that some continents split up more dramatically than others, including North America and Africa, which started coming apart pretty rapidly some 200 million years ago and remained in this fast growth stage for 10 million years. The great global flood of the Bible gives us a great explanation. It says, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up. If you take the fountains of the great deep and you break them up, that would have resulted in major magmatic activity forced up through the ocean floors. The volcanic activity would cause the seafloor to spread, and mixed with global flooding would be sufficient force to cause an accelerated continental drift. There's also, as we read in Psalm 104 and verse 8, the raising and lowering of land which occurred at the flood. Such a strong force would be sufficient, especially accompanied by earthquakes and land shifting to account for the Pangaea as we see it today. And in fact, scientists today will tell you that something catastrophic likely forced them apart. The surface of the earth bears scars. I mean, you can look at it. If there is ever a flood anywhere, walk in there a day later, a week later, and look, and you're like, wow, it really tore things up. The earth has been torn up as well. Let's look at some of the pictures. You know where this is, right? I've never been on my bucket list. I want to go out west and look at the Grand Canyon, and then I want to go dig for fossils, but I have to wait till my kids get older so they don't get to go with me. But here you have the Grand Canyon. And look at it. Look at the way it's cut out. In one description, it says the sides go almost straight up and down. In fact, they actually do go straight up and down in quite a few places. If gradual natural processes of erosion form the Grand Canyon and not Noah's flood, then the top edge of the rim should be rounded and not an edge at all, since the gradual processes of erosion always tend to round out sharp edges and not create them. In fact, after hundreds of millions of years, these same processes of erosion would have turned any such edges that might have once existed into gradual slopes. I found some pictures of the Grand Canyon where it was actually, where it looked like it had been cut out. And then at the bottom, you saw a little bit of sloping where recent erosion had caused that to happen. It is a stark contrast. National Geographic Kids says, for a long time, scientists believed that the Grand Canyon was carved out slowly over millions of years. Most of us were taught that, right? The Colorado River over millions of years carved it out. So scientists also thought that the canyon had finished forming around 1.2 million years ago. But new research has turned both theories upside down. Geologists now think the Grand Canyon grew in quick, violent spurts from the massive flooding of the Colorado River. I know something that could have carved it out. I think you do too. Gary Parker, who has a doctorate in biology and geology, said, I once believed and taught like so many others that the rock layers in the Grand Canyon represented stages in evolution laid down over vast eons of time. But after leading over 15-week-long backpacking trips for the university students through the canyon and studying the rock layers and fossils close up, he says, I'm ready to stake the place out with the Bible verses. What I once assumed was a record of a lot of time now looks like evidence of a lot of water instead. I thought that was a cool quote. He also says, one of the tilted units is so soft you can dig it out with your fingernails. Another is so hard that researchers can barely knock off a piece with a hammer. Had the two different rock types been tilted up slowly and eroded gradually by rain and rivers, the crumbling rock would all be gone, leaving valleys, and the hard unit would stick up in the ridges and the hillocks. Instead, it looks as if the flood current came in with such titanic force that the hard and soft rocks were sheared off, almost equally in a near straight line. Here's another picture that you can look at. And you can see what erosion has done at the bottoms, but at the tops where it should erode rounded first, it's still pretty sharp. There's the picture I was talking about where you can kind of see some erosion that has taken place. It's beautiful, isn't it? But it's also beautiful because it is testimony to the Genesis narrative. Any of you been to the Scablands? It's on my bucket list. Scablands, 200 miles east of Seattle, are a vast region of weird terrain, including gorges, hundreds of feet deep, enormous pits, huge boulders, scattered and dropped by giants, undulating hills that look like huge ripples, strange layers of silt and ash, and a waterfall five times wider than Niagara, but without any water. The name Scablands perfectly suits the scarred and wounded landscape, which baffled most geologists throughout the 19th century and much of the 20th. To them, no plausible explanation fits all the facts. Here's a picture that I don't think that's the waterfall they're talking about, but another one. Here's a picture of the Scablands. And again, a picture from above as you look at the Scablands. What does it look like? It's huge. But think of it on a small scale. It looks like a flood has come in and just eaten away at the land, leaving the remnant of that behind. Of course, that is much bigger than it looks like because we're looking at it from above. Modern-day geologist Vic Baker has done extensive work on the Scablin project, believes a huge ice dam that held waters of Lake Missoula burst and caused a mega flood. And we've moved on from flash to massive. Now we're at mega. Have y'all noticed that? A mega flood that devastated the landscape. In fact, Baker says that he believes this type of flood happened several times in the area. When Baker was asked about floods in other areas, get this, he mentioned large areas of flooding in Canada, Asia, the Altai, the Sayan Mountains, Siberia, and Russia, as well as China and Mongolia. It sounds like floods happened all over the world that were mega. Maybe we're dealing with one. That would make a lot more sense. He began to realize that slow-acting erosion by river could not adequately explain it all. Something sudden and much more violent was required. The massive proportions of the Scablin features, often measuring hundreds of feet, meant that whatever had formed them happened on such a gigantic scale, nothing like it had ever been seen. Really? I'm not surprised at that. Catastrophic flood, Brett's concluded, had to have happened. And that's from NASA.gov. It's not from a Christian website, of course. The Strait of Dover, never been there, not on my bucket list, but it's still pretty cool. Strait of Dover bears images and marks of the flood. In an article entitled "The Flood Made Britain an Island in 24 Hours," Tim Hall writes, "Surveys of the channel bed using new solar techniques have revealed the remains of a huge valley running southwest from the Strait of Dover. Sonar survey led by Sanjeev Gupta from Imperial College London uncovered deep bowls, scour marks, and piles of rubble on the seabed that may have been caused by a torrent of water." They look at it and they say that it might have been caused by this. A catastrophic flood had to be what separated these. A mega flood, again, is being used to describe it. The flood unleashed about 35 million cubic feet of water per second, 100 times greater than the water discharge of the Mississippi River. No exaggeration to say that this channel flood was probably one of the largest ever identified. It had profound long-term geographical consequences. Perhaps the biggest flood on Earth we have evidence for at its peak. It's believed the mega flood could have lasted for several months, or dare I say years. So the mega flood of Britain is more evidence. While scientists continue to be shocked by their findings, I think Bible students everywhere could look at all of this and read the words and say, and raise their hand in excitement and say, I know what happened, or at least what likely happened. What about the discovery of water reservoirs that are deep within the Earth's surface? We're almost home. The recent discoveries of massive water reservoirs deep in the mantle has quieted critics, as well as provided evidence for the flood of Noah's day. I think we mentioned one or two of these, but Bill Butler wrote about it. I think we read that one about the amount of water that would have to be needed, 29,000 plus feet of water. How do you get rid of it? Where does it go? And he even went on to say, no oil or gas well has ever hit a subterranean ocean 29,000 feet thick. Okay, well, maybe it's not one, maybe it's many. Here's a couple of quotes. Hidden rivers found underground in Antarctica was the headline. Researchers from Rice University discovered hidden rivers in Antarctica after spending 2 years analyzing sediment cores and precise seafloor maps covering 2,700 square miles of the western Ross Sea. One thing we know from surface observations is that some of these ice streams move at velocities of hundreds of meters per year. The ice at the bottom, it says that means the ice is being helped along. It's sliding on water or mud or both, she says. They discovered recently an underwater cave in Mexico. And as they go on to describe it, they said it's the largest flooded cavern on Earth, National Geographic reported. There's more water they didn't know about until recently. We just found out another quote says that there's almost certainly another ocean, a secret ocean hiding right beneath our feet. There's as much water inside the earth as there is in all the oceans. And that's the conclusion that scientists are reaching after a 2014 discovery planted the seed of idea down beneath the mantle is the core, but it's in the mantle that you'll find our secret sixth ocean. Actually, the clue came in the form of a brown diamond, ringwoodite, that formed about 400 miles beneath the crust. They look at this and they say somehow this is evidence, and they contend that there's more water under the surface than there is above the surface. As told in scientific reports, this is one I saw yesterday, it says it's told in scientific reports, scientists from Columbia University and the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution spent 10 days on a research ship towing electromagnetic sensors from New Jersey to Massachusetts. By measuring the way electromagnetic waves traveled through fresh and saline water, researchers mapped out fresh water reservoirs for the first time. It turns out the subterranean pool stretched for at least 50 miles off the U.S. Atlantic coast, containing vast stores of low salinity groundwater, about twice the volume of Lake Ontario. They begin about 600 feet below the seafloor and stretch for hundreds of miles, rivals the size of even the largest terrestrial aquifers. All of this to say what? To say that there's evidence. There's evidence. Over the past few years, more and more scientists, especially geologists, have grown to accept a catastrophic stance to explain the Earth and its fossilized remains the way it does. There was a great and incredible catastrophic event that tells the story of all of these pictures and all of these quotes that we've been looking at quite well. But the problem is these evolutionary scientists are looking at the evidence, they consider all kinds of explanations, except for the simplest and the best. They remain baffled and searching for answers. But the person of faith, the person who believes in God and the Genesis narrative, isn't surprised when they stand at the edge of the Grand Canyon or hear about the fossilized remains of a massive amount of dinosaurs being dug up. They're not surprised. But that's exactly what you expect it to be when you read about the flood in Genesis. And we can interpret the world around us very logically, very reasonably, very rationally, because the Bible narrative is real and it is true. Faith in God and the Bible narrative is reasonable. Again, I'll say it 100 times. We believe because of the evidence, not in spite of the evidence. Daryl, do you have anything you want to say?